श्रील गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि वो। सो नाम टू ऑल एंड गुड इवनिंग, थैंक्स सो मच फॉर We're coming today. I'm very happy and honored to be again once again in Radha Gopinath Mandir, Alachua version. I've been in North Carolina with them and some of you, and now we are being taken on this side of the country. So it's always a very unique experience to share with the Vaishnavas, wherever it may be, and speak some Harikatha. So as Archana Siddhi mentioned, we are continuing today. We have been lecturing these days on Mahaprabhu's Tattva, Gaur Katha, Gaur Kathamrita. But also some months ago, I have begun some series of lectures on Brahma Stuti, the prayers of Sri Brahmaji. So with your permission, we will speak about that today and tomorrow. And on Friday, as Archana Siddhi mentioned, we'll have Ishtagoshti, questions and answers, on whatever topic you may want. So today we are in, today is my lecture, 16th lecture, so we have started quite a while on Brahma Stuti. So I will do some brief recap of what we have been seeing since the first time I'm speaking on this topic here in Alachua. Apart, and also because we will be speaking about the very important verse of the Brahma Stuti today, arguably we could say even the most important, so casually that's happening here. So as you may know, the Brahma Stuti are the prayers of Brahma, which come after the famous Brahma Vimohan Lila, or the bewilderment of Brahma, which is narrated in the 13th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which begins, of course, before that, with the Agasur Lila, when eventually after killing Agasur, Krishna enters there, kills him eventually. Agasur enters into the body of Krishna. That represents a whole extraordinary event where even personalities from other dimensions appear, and Brahma also gets closer to look what's going on Earth and realizes this unique feature of Krishna. I mean, he met Krishna at the beginning of creation, and but Krishna was in a arguably different presentation there. He was Brahma's guru, basically. Brahma's guru, Brahma's father, Brahma's grandfather, if you want to say that Brahma was born from a lotus. Okay, but the lotus was born from a form of Krishna, even not Krishna himself. So he can be, say, the grandfather of Brahma, and his guru as well. So he spoke to Brahma at that time in a very guru-like way, if you will, according to the situation, the necessity of the moment. But now in this Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma is finding his guru in a very, unexpected dynamics. No? In the midst of a picnic, in full informality, no? Joking and eating with left hand and tasting something, and his friends, the gopas, tasting them something themselves and putting the remnants in Krishna's mouth, telling him, oh, this tastes so good, you have to taste that. And Krishna is tasting that, and he's sharing his own remnants with his friends. And Brahma is wondering whether this person is actually the person I saw at the beginning of creation. Is this my guru, or this is some like false replica of him, whatever? No, because it doesn't seem like a guru, basically. He seems like whatever you may want to say there, like a playful boy. So as we know, he tried to kidnap Krishna's friends and calves, and somehow interrupt the picnic they were having. That was their first picnic in the whole Prakat Lila. So you can imagine also how much expectation was there in all the friends of Krishna. And Krishna himself, today we are having our first picnic. We were having lunch without the ball and chain of our parents' presence there. So we are totally free to roam in the forest and eat and do whatever we like, and no, we won't have any watchful eyes on us. So everyone was like this is it. This is the day of days. And Brahma just tried to interrupt that, so you can imagine. That's not very tasteful. But Brahma was not realizing actually what was taking place. So again, as we know, he thought he kidnapped them, the boys, the calves. He thought that he put them in a cave. But actually the boys and the calves remain in a different prakash, a different dimension of the lila somewhere else. And Brahma just took some illusory replicas of them. So Brahma returned to his abode for a minute, for one of his minutes, which was a whole year on earth. And while on that year, Krishna expanded himself as each one of the calves and boys. So nobody in Braj will feel, where are the boys, where are the calves, no suffering, no separation. And all the mothers in Braj, all the cows in Braj who wanted to have Krishna as their calf, as their son, they had that opportunity for a whole year. Without knowing that, but an interesting thing is they started to experience so much affection for their children and calves. And at one point after this year, Balaram is watching the whole scene. Balaram was not aware of what's actually taking place, interestingly. So Brahma was not the only one in Bimoha. So Balaram also was bewildered. And after a year, he's seeing the cows are loving their calves too much, more than what they love Krishna. Their mothers are loving their children more than what they love Krishna. Something is going wrong here. Try to imagine the psychology of Vrindavan. In this world, we don't think like that. You may think, you love your child more than Krishna. Generally, that's normal. It's my child. It's my calf. But for Balaram and Braj, there is something strange here. Everyone is loving their offspring more than they love Krishna. This cannot be so. I mean, everyone loves Krishna the most. And then they love each other, of course. So eventually, Krishna disclosed what's taking place to Brahma. And as we know, Brahma returns, he sees that everything continues normally in Vrindavan after a year on earth. Although he thought, I kidnapped them, what may be happening? So one of his foreheads starts to spin at this point. He has four. Bimohan means the forehead spinning. Now it's one. So then he goes to the cave and he sees those replicas there. So he thinks, oh, but they are here. And he returns to Braj and all the kids and calves remain there. And he goes running back to the cave and everyone is there. So he's thinking, maybe Krishna is, when I'm going there, he's taking them to other place and vice versa. But he's going as quick as he can. And the second head starts to spin at this point. Now he's Mohan. Eventually he will become Bimohan. And as we know, eventually, Brahma is seeing all these forms of calves and boys, and from each one of them, unlimited Narayans are coming. Unlimited gods, forms of God that are coming, and unlimited Brahmas are worshipping those forms of Narayan. And Brahma is seeing that. So you can imagine, at this point, the third head of Brahma is full speed, spinning. Great Aishwarya, as we said the other day. In Vrindavan, you find the greatest degree of Aishwarya that you can find anywhere, beyond Vaikuntha and so on. In this particular moment, Krishna is showing he is the source of Narayan, a very Gaudiya point. As we will see, Krishna is still Bhagavan Swayam. That's the Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam. Krishna is the source of all forms of divinity. And this is playing out in this particular section of the Bhagavatam. Narayan is coming from one little Krishna, unlimited Narayans. And at one point after this extreme Aishwaric display, all these forms, how to say, wrap up, and only Krishna remains with one morsel of food in his left hand, and looking for the kids, his friends, and the calves. So at this point, the forehead of Rama starts to spin, the four of them are like, what's going on here? Brahma is saying. And he falls from the swan and he starts to offer pranam. He touched the ground on earth. Generally, the devas are not known for touching the ground. But Brahma is touching not only the ground with his feet, but with his head. Of course, it's the ground of Braj. And he's washing Krishna's feet, doing abhishek with his tears, taking turns with each one of his foreheads, offering pranam to him, and crying very deeply, starting to realize. Who Krishna is, who himself is in connection to Krishna. And of course, the mistake he made in between. So a big mixture of emotions is there, no? Like happiness because of the epiphany he's having, some repentance and so on. So all this will give place to Brahma Stuti, which are the prayers of Brahma coming in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. There are 40 verses. So today we will be seeing verse 14. So still we have a long way to go. As you can see, I'm just giving one verse per class, and that's difficult already to do that and summarize, but what to do. So in these verses, Brahma will try to make sense of his own affinity. In the beginning of creation, when Brahma met Krishna, he expressed to him, "I would like to have a relationship with you in Sakya, as a friend." So now Krishna gave him a trailer of that in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. "You want me as a friend? Okay, here, this is what it implies to be a friend of mine. Welcome to the picnic." And Brahma, for a minute, didn't pass the test. No? But now he's making sense of all that is happening, and actually he feels attracted to that. So he's discovering himself in that particular prospect, as he's discovering Krishna as well, in that particular relationship. So he will try to make sense of his feelings by presenting the philosophy that will support that bhava, those feelings. Because as we say, for us bhava, bhava bhakti, prem bhakti, these transcendental emotions are to be sustained by siddhanta or tattva, philosophy. Bhava is a philosophical emotion, if you will, to put it like that. It's not just emotion. Everyone can be emotional. But the emotion we have as a goal of sadhana, that has siddhanta and tattva as its foundation. So this series of verses and prayers of Brahma basically lay out the whole Gaudiya Siddhanta in a very systematic and interesting way, verse after verse after verse, and gradually they escalate to Brahma's expression of his longing and his emotion and his prospect of service in Braj. So there we have already studied, as you can see, 13 verses. Many important verses from our tradition are there. Tatinu kampam susamik shamano, jnana prayasam udapasyana mantai, and many others that will come as well. Where Brahma is presenting the glories of bhakti, above karma, above jnana, specifically jnana sunya bhakti. And then he starts to show, before this verse, the one we will see today, how Krishna is... Different aspects of the divinity are aspects of Krishna, like Mahavishnu, Garbhdakshai Vishnu, Shirodakshai Vishnu. And today we will reach one interesting verse in which Brahma will make the point that not only these Purusha avatars are your aspects or expansions, if you want to put it like that, but Narayan himself is a portion of you, which is, again, it's a very revolutionary statement. Because for many people, Krishna is an avatar of Narayana. But Brahma here establishing Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, in other words. So let me make a brief recap. I did a brief recap of the whole series, but generally I do also a brief recap of the last class I did, the previous verse, because every verse is somehow connected with the other in a thread. So I will briefly mention some words regarding the verse we saw in our previous verse, verse number 13. Where Brahma is addressing Krishna as the mother and the father at the same time. In previous verses, Brahma referred to Krishna as a mother and he inside the womb. Everything is in your womb. Everything is inside of you. And in this particular verse, he's referring to Krishna as a father. So I'll read the verse very quickly. It says, "My dear Lord, the revealed scriptures say that the unborn Brahma..." He's speaking about himself in third person. "Comes out of the lotus flower growing from the navel of Narayana, who lies in the waters of dissolution into which the three worlds have merged. These words are surely not false. So was I not born from you?" So here Brahma is presenting a rhetorical question. Of course, it's quite well known from Shastra that you are my father, Brahma is implying. And you are my grandfather, if you want to put it like that, as we mentioned. If my father is the lotus, then you are my grandfather. The lotus comes from you. Your Padmana, from your navel, the lotus is coming. So Brahma somehow is pointing at the uniqueness of his birth. Because not everyone born as Brahma was born. That's a very peculiar type of birth. So he's not out of pride. He's not saying, I'm so special, I was born from a lotus. But he's saying, out of humility, he's begging. In these verses, the thread through all these verses is Brahma's begging Krishna special forgiveness. Because he's feeling, I made a very special offense. I made a very special mistake, so I need a very special type of mercy and forgiveness. So I was born, I have a special birth. We are specially connected as father and son. So the implication is I'm your special child. So the father has to give some special forgiveness to his special child. Oh, please. Something like that. Our acharyas are explaining. So again, technically speaking, Brahma was born from a lotus, and the lotus is not coming directly from Krishna, but from Garbhodakshay Vishnu. But ultimately, Krishna is the source of Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and that's the point Brahma wants to make here. And today he will make this point again more clear, because in today's verse, Brahma will establish Krishna is not only the source of the three Purushas. Krishna is not only his mother, father, grandfather, however you may like to put it, but Krishna is the source of God. Krishna is tu Bhagavan, so yeah, in motion. That's playing out here in the Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma Stuti. So today, this very revolutionary concept will come. Krishna is the source of God. Generally, we are accustomed to hear God is a source of everything. But God, technically speaking, is Vishnu, Narayan. Krishna is something else. Not something less. Something else. Krishna is God beyond God. The God function, as we generally think of it, the creator of the universe, the regulator of the cosmos, etc., etc., that's not Krishna. Krishna is lost in Lila. That's another form of him, a portion of him is God. So as I like to say, it's not that Krishna is an aspect of God, but God is an aspect of Krishna. It's a very mind-boggling theology with Gaudiya's percent. It may take some time to digest it, but here's one of those verses in which this point will be made. So before going to the verse in itself, I'd like to connect previous verse with this one. Srila Jiva Goswami is doing this in his Bhagavad Sandarbha. There's a section in which he's quoting almost all these verses of the Brahma Stuti to make different points about Krishna, Krishna's form. So here, Bhagavad Sandarbha, Anuchet 32, Brahma, Jiva Goswami says that Brahma may have an expectation, may expect that Krishna may object something to what he's saying in the previous verse. So he says like this, Krishna may object the following to Brahma. If I were the Narayan who lies in the waters of dissolution, as Brahma said before, then it could be said that you took birth from me. But the fact is, I am not Narayan. Remember, Krishna is in Vrindavan. He's not walking in Vrindavan saying, I'm Narayan. He won't say that. He will say, I'm just a cowherd boy. Narayan is God. What are you talking about? So, in other words, and Brahma has been praying to Krishna saying, you are my mother. Everything is in your womb. And Krishna is saying, what? I'm your mother? I'm a male. I'm a boy. I'm not even a man. I'm a boy. How can you be anyone's mother, father, mother to begin with? I mean, I'm not a girl. I'm not a woman. So Krishna is speaking in Brajabhav, and Brahma is like, what's going on here? So Krishna already is taken aback by Brahma's calling him mother to begin in one verse, father in another verse, and Garbhodakshay Vishnu is coming from you, and Krishna with his morsel of food in his hand looking for his boys and calves. What are you talking about? And now you're telling me that God is coming. So Krishna basically is countering Brahma's presentation, saying, but I'm just a young boy. I'm the son of Nanda Maharaj. Everyone knows here in Braj. You can ask any Brajavasi who I am. Let's see if they tell I am their mother or father on all this weird narrative you are presenting to me. How can I be your father? And your father in particular, you are Brahma. I mean, you are not any ordinary person. You are Brahma. I mean, arguably, you are the father of everyone in one sense. And you are telling that I am your father? This doesn't compute. No? So Krishna basically says the point, if I were Narayan, your claim will be true. But that cannot be so. I cannot be Narayan. So why you are trying to impose this upadhi on me? This is a designation, that I am God. Someone tells Krishna, you are God in Vrindavan. That's false ego, basically. That's not part of your identity. I mean, he's God somewhere else, basically. No, he's God in the office, in Vaikuntha. No. But in Vrindavan, the office is far away. Vrindavan is home. No? So expecting that Krishna may retort in this way, Brahma will speak today's verse. No? Making this point, you are the source of Narayan. You are Narayan, and on top of that, Narayan is a portion of you, actually. A very, very shocking statement. I mean, if Krishna is shocked till now, you can imagine how we'll be shocked after hearing this. The whole religious world will be shocked, but Krishna himself even.
And he's really shocked. He's not just pretending.
Exactly. That's the point that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes in his Raghavarma Chandrika, when Krishna is, for example, crying when Yashoda is running after him. He's saying, he's crying. He's actually crying. He's not pretending to cry so Yashoda's Vatsalya is nourished. No, he's not making a show. He's not calculating. He's totally, fully engrossed in Bhav. Krishna is hungry. Krishna is afraid. Krishna, but only to reciprocate with the love of those devotees. The Bhava of each one of the Brajavas is such, and Krishna becomes so controlled by that Bhav that he's just like a puppet in the hands of Prem, if you will. No? So yeah, that's what Kunti Devi says in the Bhagavatam. When she sees Krishna's crying, and she says, when I see the kajal, eyeliner on your eyes falling and creating these like black lines, I'm bewildered. No? Because the point that she's making is, you are not making a show. You are actually crying. But Kunti Devi is a Jnana Bhakta, in the sense of she has knowledge that Krishna is God. But at the same time, she is realizing, you are God, but you are actually crying. It's not that you are making a show. I mean, you are still omniscient, but your omniscience recedes to the background. All your God-like qualities, omnipotence, omniscience, omni, became buried under layers and layers of Braja Prem. Basically. So that's the God we worship. So yeah, Krishna is not making a show here in front of Brahma. He's really a Brajavasi. He feels like that. That's his abhiman. That's his self-identity. Now, if you are interviewing Krishna in Vrindavan, who you are, he won't tell, I'm God. I'm supreme. I'm the source of Narayana. He will say, I'm Nandanandan, Yashoda Nandan. I'm a Gopa. What do you do? I take care of the cows. I mean, that's who I am. I mean, that's my business. No. And he's really into that. He's, again, not playing it. He's really meaning that. But again, Brahma wants to enter that world, but at the same time, he's not yet there. So he's actually now realizing who Krishna is in terms of Aishwarya, but all that in the context of the attraction he feels towards the intimacy of Vrindavan. He feels attracted to serve Krishna as a friend, but at the same time, he's realizing, oh, he's the source of God. He's the source of Narayana. On top of that, I want to be his friend. But to be his friend, first I need to have these other elements in place. These Aishwaryas we spoke to the other day as the foundation to Madhurya. Now, in all the experience of Madhurya, of intimacy in Vrindavan, is being sustained in the background by Aishwarya. If you take out Aishwarya, the intimacy is just ordinary dealings as the intimacy we may have here. Anyhow, let's go to the verse. Verse 14. I'll recite it first in Sanskrit for a minute and then we'll share the translation. This verse has 2 meters, Indra Bhamsa and Indra Bhadra, combined, one line and one line, so it may sound a little bit irregular, but that's what it is. So the verse says, Narayanastam nahi sarva dehinam atmasya di sakila loka sakshi Narayano angam narabu jalayana tachapi satyam natavaiva maya. So the translation of the verse says like this: Brahma is speaking to Krishna. Are you not the original Narayan, O Supreme Controller? Since you are the soul of every embodied being and the eternal witness of all created realms, Narayan is a portion, indeed, Narayan is a portion of yours. And he is called Narayana because he is the generating source of the primeval water of the universe. He is real, not a product of your illusory Maya. So, of course, the main expression in this verse is Narayana Angam. Angam means a portion of you. So, Brahma is making this crucial point here. Narayana Angam. So let's briefly go through the ambaya, the word by word of the verse, and then we will try to unfold a little bit of its meaning and implications. So the word, first word is Narayan. Today's verse will revolve a lot around the word Narayan and different meanings of that. So Narayan means Narayan. God. We will explain the etymology of that. Narayana Tvam. Tvam means you. Nahi means not. So like, are you not Narayan? So we will see that there are two possibilities for this section. That Brahma may be saying, you are not Narayan, in the sense that you are beyond Narayan, or you are Narayan, connecting Krishna with Narayan. And then going beyond that. No? So Narayana Tvam Nahi, sarva-dehi-nam. So sarva-dehi-nam refers to all embodied beings. Sarva-dehi-nam atma, in soul. So you are the soul of all souls. The souls of every being, basically. Asi-adisha. So asi means you are, and adisha means supreme controller. Isha means controller, and adisha means controller of controllers. There are many ways in which Krishna is addressed similarly. Then he says, Akila Loka Sakshi. So Sakshi means witness, and Akila Loka means of all the planets. So it's a way of referring to the quality of omniscience that so much characterizes God. Again, Narayan comes the word, Narayan, and then Angam. So Angam means a portion. So we could say first part, Brahma is connecting Krishna with Narayan, and then he's saying, but indeed you are, Narayan is actually your portion. So you are much, you are the whole, the complete whole, and Narayan is an aspect of you. Narabhujala means the waters that originate from Nara. This is in connection with the name Narayan. Ayanat means because of being manifesting from that source, the manifesting that. That means that portion, referring to Narayan. Cha api, and indeed. And Brahma concludes saying, Satya, this is true, this is a fact. Remember, he's not just speaking, but he's having an insight. Na tava, na means not, and tava means your, and eva maya, eva at all, and maya, illusory energy. So let's go to the different purports of our Gaudiya commentators. And as I already mentioned, I didn't mention here, but what I've been doing through all these lectures, the previous ones, is I'm first of all reading one brief explanation that my Guru Maharaj has given, but will be included in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandal. And he very generously shared with me when I told him that I asked him for his blessings to speak on Brahma Stuti. And he said, yes. And he told me, But I've written a commentary on those verses in my forthcoming book. So I asked him, so? The implication of that is, and he told me, of course, that if you want, I can lend them to you and you can share them. Okay. Yes, why not? So I'm beginning with that. It's the Bhakti Vedanta Bhavanubad. It's like an explanation of the verse, combining different points of other commentators and adding his own insight. And then we will go through some of the main or Gaudiya commentators like Sridhar Swami, Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad, Srila Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and so on. So But beginning with Meghunraj's commentary, he presents a brief dialogue between Krishna and Brahma. Again, in connection with the previous verse. So Krishna, in between the lines, is telling Brahma, if you are born from a lotus, as Brahma mentioned already, you are the son of Narayan, not me. So Brahma replies, basically in this verse, ah, but you are Narayan. Yes, I'm the son of Narayan, but you are Narayan. Appearing as the first, second, and also the third Purusha. Mahavishnu, Garbhakshaya Vishnu, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, who is the soul of every soul, Paramatma, the eternal witness of the world, Akila Loka Sakshi, Brahma says this in this verse. And Narayan is the shelter of everyone, shelter of everyone. Everyone means every person, Nara, and Ayana means shelter. So one of the meanings of Narayana means the shelter of everyone, which means, as the Bhagavatam says, you know, there are 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. The 10th one is called Ashraya, which means shelter. The shelter. And the other 9 topics are Ashrita, which means the sheltered ones. So he is the shelter of everything else. Everything else takes shelter. That's the quality of being God. If you are not God, you cannot be the shelter of everyone. So Narayan means God and means the shelter of everyone. So Narayan is the shelter of everyone, even as he lies in the universal waters, and by his yoga maya appears delimited to the material eye. So Narayan can have different applications, as you may imagine. Narayan as Vishnu in Vaikuntha, Narayan in connection to each one of the three Purushas, which are three Vishnus, if you will, Garbhasai Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and so on. But also Narayan ultimately refers to Krishna also, as we always hear every single name of God, or even of the demigods, first refer to Krishna, and there to them. If you say Indra, Indra means basically like the boss. So who is the boss? Indra? I mean, if you go through the bath and you realize that's not the case. He tries to. He tries hard. He wants to. But Krishna is Indra, Indranath. No? He's the lord of Indra, the boss of the boss, basically, no? And in this way, similarly, different, like Shiva means auspicious, ultimately that's the name of Krishna. Indra, ultimately that's the name. And similar, I don't know, Durga, first of all, is the name of Radha. The Adi Devi and the Adi Deva, all this name for the Devis and Devas first refer to them. Durga means very difficult to go to. Interestingly. Confidential reality there. So again, the point is that we will see throughout the different purports how the name Narayan will be applied in some cases to Vishnu, to Krishna, and so on. So let's begin, or let's continue with the commentary of Sridhar Swami, ancient commentator, very, very much revered by Sriman Mahaprabhu. His Bhavartha Deepika, very much quoted by our Goswamis in their own commentaries. So I'll read some sections and we'll comment on that. So Sridhar Swami says, with the modulation of the tone of voice, the negation, you are not Narayan, is turned into an affirmation. You are not Narayan? The drift is, of course you are. So Sridhar Swami will present that particular angle of view, that Brahma is telling Krishna, are you not Narayan? Like implying, you are Narayan. You cannot but be Narayan. So in the case of Sridhar Swami, the verse mostly points to the connection between Krishna and Narayan as one and the same. We will see some other commentators will be, leaning towards the idea, you are beyond Narayan actually. But we have to begin somewhere. So let's begin by connecting Krishna with Narayan, and then we will not disconnect him, but put him even on a higher situation. So Sridhar Swami says that in case Krishna may retort, and these dynamics we will find in almost all commentators, how am I Narayan? Now remember, Krishna is in full, in his childhood leelas, just coming from a picnic, playing with his friends, and suddenly one four-headed guy appears and tells, you are God. No. So Krishna will reply accordingly, like, how I am God? How I'm Narayan? And Brahma starts to use different words to indicate this point. No? Like, sarva dehi nam atmasi You are the soul of all embodied beings. And Krishna says, well, but in that case, how could you not be Narayana? Because in one sense, you are also, all beings are in you at the beginning of creation and eventually manifest their specific karmic tendency from the previous cycle and so on. So then comes the name Narayana. Sridhar Swami says, the derivation of the name Narayana, in this case, in reply to this question, means he who is the basis, Ajana means basis, of the multitude of souls, Nara. So you are the foundation of every single soul, including me, Brahma is saying. So I'm not the source of all beings. I mean, I'm supported by you. So the idea basically is you are Narayana on account of being the soul of all beings. And Brahma is establishing it over and over again. Then he uses the word Adisha, as we mentioned, which meant like supreme controller. And Adisha also means, how do you say in English? Impeller? Impeller? Impel is the verb, no? Impeller. So in that connection, the name Narayan can mean he from whom the whole set of souls, the souls are set in motion, if you will. If you want to connect Narayan with Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and the creative cycle, and the Srishti Lila, and so on. And Sridhar Swami then says, also you have Akila Loka Sakshi, which means you directly see the world. You are the witness of the whole creation. So in this case, means you know everyone. You know every single soul in every creation. And Sridhar Swami concludes, again, the gist of the verse is, Brahma is saying to Krishna, you are Narayan, period. That's how Sridhar Swami puts it. No, that's implication of Brahma by referring to Krishna with all these different names. All the possibilities of you being Narayan, this is the conclusion. All of them converge in you. You are Narayan in every single sense of the term. So in other words, here Brahma is attributing the characteristics of Narayan to Krishna. Narayan is the source of, you are that. Narayan is this, you are that. So he asserts that Krishna, you are certainly Narayan. He is not establishing that Narayan is Krishna. He is not making the connection the other way around, but in this particular way. And the word he here in Sanskrit is how to say in English, like indeclinable?
Indeclinable.
Indeclinable. Thank you so much. So he is, implies indeclinability. Sorry for creating new words. But the idea of he is to establish certainty. No, he is like certainly. So like implying there's no other way that it can be, but like this. Again, this is creating the basis for the idea of, indeed, actually, Narayana is a portion of you. To begin with, we establish the connection between Krishna and Narayana. From this basis, our Gaudiya commentators will elaborate. And for example, if you go to the second chapter of Adi Lila, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami there explains this verse in detail, through the whole chapter, trying to make this very revolutionary point again, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. But this point is made mostly by the Goswamis. Now, Sridhar Swami here takes a more still general idea, like, okay, Krishna is Narayana, period. But from now on, we will see Sanat and Jiva, they will say, Narayana is a portion of Krishna, actually. So Sanatan Goswami says the following. Let's go to Sanatan Goswami's Brihat Vaishnava Tosuni commentary. So he begins immediately making that point. He says, realizing that Krishna's glory is much superior to Narayan's, so the Goswamis immediately put that in Gaudiya context. Let's not lose time. Sridhar Swami says, connected Krishna with Narayan. Let's go to the real deal here. No, Krishna is superior to Narayan. So Brahma realizing that, he's afraid of saying that Krishna is Narayan, according to Sanatan Goswami. Brahma is afraid of comparing Krishna with Narayan. Now he's thinking, I made so many offenses till now, I don't want to incur in any other one. So maybe comparing Krishna with Narayan is a form of offense. I'm realizing the superiority of one. Of course, Krishna and Narayan are the same in tattva, but in bhava they are different. That's what Venkatavata told Mahaprabhu in South India, when Mahaprabhu was asking Venkatavata, why Lakshmi wanted to run with Krishna for Rasa Lila. Why she wanted to leave. Now, she's famous as the most chaste lady in the universe, but she wanted to run and have a rendezvous with Krishna. How is that possible? She's your goddess, Venkatavata. Venkatavata was a Sri Vaishnava. And as we know, he mentioned that actually Krishna and Narayana are one and the same. In tattva, they are the same, metaphysically speaking, ontologically speaking, they belong to the same, they are the same person. But in bhava, there is difference. So he made that point, which somehow is made here also. So Brahma is afraid of comparing Krishna with Narayana here, in terms of his realizing, okay, the superiority of Krishna in terms of rasa, the prospect for a sacred aesthetic rapture, if you will. So he's saying, reverentially, Sanatana Goswami says, reverentially Brahma says, O overlord of the sphere of the universe, you are not Narayana. Remember, according to the Goswamis, Brahma is saying, you are not Narayan. Brahma is afraid of comparing him with Narayan. You are not Narayan. Narayanas tvam na. Now, according to the Sanskrit, you can connect the terms in a way that it means, tvam means you, na means not, Narayan means Narayan. So you are not Narayan. In other words, the na can be connected with other quote, but here Sanatana connects like that. Why? Because he who is Narayan is actually a plenary portion of yours. Narayana Angam. So you are not Narayan. You are the source of Narayan. Which again, for us is, as we say the other day, we take these things for granted because we came to the temple first day. Okay, that's Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all the forms of divinity come from. Okay, that's all. You continue. You are not raised in a Sri Vaishnava neighborhood where Narayan is God in South India and Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, of course, and he's celebrated once a year for Janmashtami, but the rest of the year is like Om Namo Narayan. We were not in that context. But if you travel in time and in geography, you will realize that the idea of saying Krishna is the source of Narayan, that will be pretty shocking for many. But our Goswamis were establishing the Gaudiya theology in a very bold way, and of course in a very genius-like way, of course, not just whimsically saying things out of context, but showing how this is in Shastra. So again, through Sridhar Swami, this is presented like a rhetorical question. Are you not Narayan? Of course you are. To confirm, Krishna is Narayan, to give that first ground. But then, as we see, Sanatana Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, in his Bhagavad Sandarbha as well, they are presenting this idea. Certainly you are not Narayan. You are the source of Narayan. So it's the same point, if you will, but from different perspective. You are Narayan, and on top of that, you are not Narayan. Still, you are Narayan in one sense, but on top of that, you are something more. Sorry, you had a comment?
So these prayers, they're in real time, right? So as he's speaking them, he's realizing, right?
Exactly.
There's progression.
Exactly, yeah.
So right in the middle of the verse, which is tracked by, well, maybe you're not.
Right, sorry?
In the middle of the verse, first he says, are you not Narayan? He says, no, but maybe you're not Narayan. You know what I mean? He's having the realization.
Yeah, we were speaking. That's a very good point that actually I made in some of the previous lectures, that actually these 40 verses of prayers are represent like a progressive sequence of increased epiphany that Brahma is having. It's not that verse 1 and verse 40 are on the same level. It's not the same Brahma, first verse. And you can, when you go through the verses, you realize, okay, this Brahma is totally transformed from one verse to the other one. So that's a very interesting idea. Yeah, he's having further and further realization as he prays to Krishna. No? That should be happening to us, that's the idea. If we are really praying from a sincere place, each single prayer will be deeper than the previous one. Now we'll be closer to Krishna than the previous one. So Brahma is showing that. So we could make that case. Okay, now you are Narayan. No, you are not Narayan. Actually, I'm realizing you are more than Narayan. In one same verse, he's reaching, after every line, a higher degree of realization. So again, that's showing us like, the prospect for us also as sadhakas. Now we have to remember this is not just oh, how nice Brahmas is praying there, and I'm here on a latch, I have nothing to do with that. No. You have to make those sections relatable. I mean, not imitation, not imitating Brahma or trying to enforce something, but I mean, somehow you have to create some emotional bond with Shastra, because if not, it's just like, I'm here, and there is this ancient book, and this prayer from this guy some thousands of years ago, but I have nothing to do with that. That's not how we should relate to Shastra. We are to inhabit those concepts, and especially the prayer sections are there for us to own the prayers, if you will, ourselves, to make them ours in the way by way of identifying with the mood and the point. So yeah, and eventually, as we were mentioning, Brahma will establish this more and more and more and more. You know, how despite the absolute, remember, Brahma is having this analogy, this epiphany, okay, you are more than God, but still he's coming back and forth. You are God, but you are a coward. On top of that. And I want that. But you are God. But no, at the end he will say, Ahobhagyam, Ahobhagyam, Nanda Gopa, Brajokasam, Yan Mitram Paramanandam, Purna Brahma Sanatanam. So this verse, very famous verse, almost the conclusion, verse 32 or something. So he's saying, oh, how wonderful. So times he says, Ahobhagyam, Ahobhagyam, how fortunate are these cowherd boys who are relating with you as a friend, although you are Purna Brahma Sanatanam. You are the complete Brahman, an eternal reality, absolute truth. So this is a mixture of Aishwarya and Madhurya. He's saying, you are the complete absolute Brahman, but these gopas are relating with you as one-on-one, like friends. How fortunate they are. Implying, I want that fortune. Still, he's aware you are God, but he's seeing himself more and more predominated for the intimate idea. No? So yeah, every single verse is increasing Brahma's insight. Mm-hmm. So again, he's making this crucial point here. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. Do not lose sight of this line ever when you open the Bhagavatam. Because again, Jiva Goswami is saying this is the Paribhas Sutra of the Bhagavatam. This is the line which rules all other statements in this particular book. All other statements are to be ruled by this single line. And if everyone will say, as my Guru Maharaj likes to point, only one line is, I mean, the whole 18,000 verses have to revolve around one line of one verse. It's not that whimsical a little bit? And Jiva Goswami said, no, I can show you that. I'll write something about it. Here you have Krishna Sandarbha. That's my making sense of how the whole Bhagavatam has to revolve about this single line. All that is in this single line. Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. The word two in the Bhagavatam means but. And so in this section of the Bhagavatam, in the beginning, it is a description of the different avatars of Bhagavan. And then it says, Krishna's two means but, no, which is a distinction is introduced. Now we are speaking about different avatars, but Krishna, Bhagavan Swayam. He's the original source. In the words of Srila Prabhupada, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, Godhead has many personalities, multifaceted jewel, but this is the supreme aspect of his personality, if you will, the most intimate one. And sometimes the Brahma Samhita gives the example of a lamp. Maybe you have heard that one. Like a lamp that will light candle. That will light other candles. So you may see many candles and seem, okay, all the same. No, but there is one who was the original lighting candle, if you will. And that's Krishna. Although we may speak about other avatars and forms of the Absolute, which are Purna, which are complete in themselves, Krishna is particularly more complete. Srila Rupa Goswami will present it in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says, Krishna, even speaking about Krishna, he makes gradations. What to speak about other forms of the Absolute. So he will say, Krishna in Dwarka, he's Purna, which means he's complete. No. Krishna in Mathura, he's Purnatara. He's more complete. And Braja Krishna, he is Purnatama. He's the most complete. All forms are complete. No, it's not that we are saying some of them are not complete, but some of them are more complete, although everyone is complete. And Krishna is the most complete. Krishna is two Bhagavan, so yeah. Brahma Samhita has many parallel sections, interestingly, to Brahma Stuti. I mean, it's the same person praying. For example, Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. This is another way of saying Krishna is two Bhagavan, so yeah. Ishvara Parama Krishna. It's another way of saying Krishna is two Bhagavan, so yeah. Verse 39 of Brahma Samhita, Brahma is saying similar thing. He's saying, I worship Govinda, the Adipurusha, the primeval Lord, who, though he partially manifests within these worlds as different avatars, like forms like Ram and so on, he has appeared in his own, in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, full-fledged form as Krishna, the Supreme Person. So, in other treatises like Brahma Samhita, Brahma is making the same point that he's making here. And there are some other sections in the Bhagavatam which make the same point. Like, for example, when at the end of the 10th canto, when Vishnu is kidnapping, I mean, at the beginning, you don't know who is kidnapping whom, the sons of this Brahman who are being born and dying, and Arjuna appears on the scene and promises, I will protect this child. And if I cannot protect the child, I kill myself. In Kshatriya pride, he presents that. He cannot protect the child, so Arjuna is about to kill himself. No, because he gave his word to the Brahmin. And eventually, long story short, Krishna appears and says, no, don't kill yourself, Arjuna. I know where we can go. So they go to the abode of Vishnu, and Vishnu is there with all this child that he had kidnapped, like in a quite mischievous way, if you will. Generally, Vishnu is not that mischievous, but anyhow, there are exceptions to the rule. And he tells Krishna, well, actually, I kidnap all these kids because I want to have your darshan. So Vishnu is telling Krishna, I want to have your darshan. It's another way of saying Krishna is two Bhagavan. So yeah, Krishna is the source of Vishnu. So anyhow, some words in connection to Sanatana Goswami's commentary. Let's go to Jiva Goswami's commentary. And I'm, of course, being relatively brief here and not repeating things that each of these acharyas may have said the same thing each other. I'm just mentioning once some of these same things. So Jiva Goswami is mentioning that Brahma hears when if you wanted to think, okay, Brahma is calling Krishna Narayan, okay, Brahma will imply with this, you are the main Narayan. Narayan is Narayan also. No, that's another possibility. You are Narayan, but you are the original Narayan. Again, as we mentioned before. Yeah, there is someone called Narayan. He's also Narayan. Because he's an aspect of you who are Narayan. Do you follow the point? You are the original Narayan. Like you are the original Indra. There is someone else called Indra. Because partially may represent some aspect of your qualities or whatever. But you are Indra. For excellence. So yeah, there is someone else called Narayan, but you are Narayan. You are the Narayan. His being Narayan is secondary. Your being Narayan is primary. So you are Narayan in every sense of the term. You are the, in other words, as the verse is saying, the other Narayan is an Anga. And you are the Angi. So Angi means what? Like a body. And Anga means like the limb of the body. So Narayan, the second Narayan, if you will, the secondary Narayan is a limb of the body, of your body, of you who are Angi, the original Narayan. And Adisha, Jiva Goswami say, Adisha can refer here to Mahavishnu, the first of the three Purushas, Adisha. Sorry, he says, Isha is the first Purusha, the quote-unquote, through whom the universe is manifest. Mahavishnu is Purusha, and it is Isha, and you are Adisha, which means you are the Vishnu of Vishnu, if you will. If Vishnu is the source of everything in this world, you are his source. You are the Vishnu of Vishnu, you are the Narayan of Narayan, like this. And now Jiva Goswami then, this is in his Lagu Vaishnav Toshani, his commentary in the Bhagavatam, but in his Bhagavat Sandarbha, he takes another stance. he mainly focuses on the idea is Krishna is not Narayan. Again, he's something else. So if the meaning of the verse is that Krishna is not Narayan, Jiva Goswami presents again some conversation between Krishna and Brahma. So Krishna will ask Brahma here, through the lotus lips of Sri Jiva, why is he called Narayan? Krishna is asking, why is Narayan called Narayan? I'm not Narayan, Krishna is saying. Why is Narayan called Narayan? How do I differ from him? Tell me, Brahma. So Brahma will answer, he is the indwelling supreme self of all embodied creatures. So again, all these qualities mentioned in this verse, now Jiva Goswami will connect them to Narayan, not to Krishna. Sorry if I... So Narayan is the supreme self of all embodied creatures, and therefore he's called Narayan, which means, again, the shelter of all the totality of beings. But you, the original person, the origin of Narayan, you are unconcerned even with performing the function of being the shelter of all living beings. Like implying, you are quite beyond all these creative functions and administrative, bureaucratic stuff in the cosmos and so on. Paramatma is doing all that. Paramatma is presiding over Maya Shakti, Tatastha Shakti. But you are only surrounded by Swarup Shakti. You don't know anything outside of your Leela, basically. No, and in that, and remember, Narayan meant the shelter of all living beings. And here he's implying, but you are his shelter. So you are Narayanayana, the shelter, the ayana of all Nara, of all living beings. And Jiva Goswami continues paraphrasing Brahma. He's saying, furthermore, Narayan is Akila Loka Shakshi, again, the witness of creation, referring to Narayan, or one who sees all entities directly. Therefore, he is called Narayan, one who knows the totality of beings. But you, Krishna, Brahma is saying, you are witnessing the living beings only indirectly through Narayan, who is your Anga. You are directly, you are witnessing something else. You are witnessing your picnic with your friends. You are witnessing your play with your cow. That's your direct witnessing. But related to the cosmos issues, that's being done secondarily through Narayan. So Narayan is your part. Vishnu, Narayan is another word to refer here to. Sirodakasai, Vishnu, Paramatma in everyone's heart, the witness, Antaryami. But you do not witness directly. So that's what distinguishes you from him, Jiva Goswami says in Bhagavad Sundara. So there is a possibility of understanding this verse in this way. Brahma is telling him, yeah, all this verse is applicable to Narayan. You are something else. So Krishna is not the direct witness of all, every single living being entity's actions. He's again the supreme enjoyer, he's rasik seker, he's absorbed in tasting mellows in lila. That's a very unique point that we need to understand. And we need to not to feel, oh, Krishna doesn't know what's happening or something like that. No. Basically, you should ask, why should he be interested in the nonsense I may be doing? I mean, if I try to be a devotee, then he will take attention. But if you choose just to remain under the influence of Maya Shakti, why should I force him out of the Leela to be attentive to whatever nonsense I choose to do under the influence of the gunas? No, for that, he has some particular agency that will deal with that. No, but he's too busy, too engaged in Leela. No, so it will be a little bit, how to say, over-demanding from us to say, Krishna, stop being aware of what's going on in Leela and just be aware of what I choose to do in the context of Maya. It doesn't make sense. But the more we enter into the shelter of Bhakti Shakti, of course, naturally, Krishna will be presiding over that experience, basically. But the point is, God is not basically presiding over material creation. That's an interesting Gaudiya point. Jiva Goswami makes that point in Paramatma Sandarbha. Mostly people think God is he who presides over the world and the souls in this world. For most of the people, that's what God is about. He has to be aware of what I need, what I want, what I'm asking for, and he has to provide. And I will do my part, thank you so much, we signed the contract, and I make God part of my agenda, and that's it. I do not care for his own agenda, for his own life, for his own intimacy and world. Most of the people think like that. Okay, God is somewhere there to provide and to keep everything in place, and I do my part, and he's there, I'm here. Well, like my Guru Maharaj likes to share when we once Bhaktivedanta Bon Maharaj was in Europe, and he was invited to witness a dramatic play made by some Christian group, dramatic performance. And in one part of the play, God appeared on stage, but he was actually on a balcony. He was on a stage, but on a balcony on stage. And every time, sometimes he will say, like, okay, I bless you. If you want this, I provide it. So that will be his intervention. So after the play, he was asked, so what do you think about the play? And he, and Bhaktivedanta Bon Maharaj replied very nicely, saying, well, it was nice, but but for us, Gaudias, God is not on the balcony, but God is on the main stage. No. He's fully participating in the life of a devotee, performing drama, performing lila. No, he's not just in the balcony appearing whenever we call him. Just say yes, just bless. Okay, you can continue. Go with your life. I go with mine. No, he's taking the full main stage. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's the situation. Paramatma, the idea that most people have of God, that corresponds with Paramatma. And it's okay. That's God, technically speaking. And that's why we say Krishna is something else. Krishna is not performing the normally assigned functions of God. He's lost in play. So that's something else. That's God not as God. That's God beyond God. Anyhow, so he's conducting all these material affairs and so on through all his different forms and expansions. But he himself is very busy. I mean, he's very busy. He has to eat every time Radha is cooking for him. He has to go and play with his friends. He has to be drinking Yashoda's breast milk and so on. He has lots of things to do on a daily basis. If you study his Astakaliya Lila dynamics, I mean, there's no time for anything. It's okay. Sit down. We are creating a whole event for a glass of water. Thank you. So Krishna responds to this. Okay, so according to Jiva Goswami, Krishna replies, so it seems that your intention is to say that Narayan is not me. Okay, I'm getting it clear, Krishna is telling to Brahma. But somehow that I'm Narayan in some other kind of way, how is that? No, Krishna is replying to Brahma after making all this point. So Brahma is saying, according to Jiva Goswami, he is Narayan. Narayan is Narayan. Because all actions of the living beings proceed from him. That's another meaning of Narayan. But your controlling potency is superior to his. You are the supreme controller, the supreme Narayan, above Narayan, Adisha. That's why you are also called Narayan, basically. In the same way, he says that governors and the emperor who rules over the governors, both of them are called king. Sometimes in the practice, in the engagement. The emperor is called king, the governors are called king as representatives of the emperor. So in the same way, he's called Narayan, but you are ultimately Narayan. So that's what Srila Jiva Goswami is mentioning. We may need to go a few minutes, transgress a few minutes with your blessings. Let's go to Bhishmanath Chakravarti Thakur. And with this we are closing. I won't extend that longer. So similarly, Bhishmanath Chakravarti says, anticipating that Krishna might say, is it true that you are the son of Narayan? But then who am I, O Brahma? Again, all commentators present the same narrative of Krishna being in a state of mugdata, in the words of Vishwanath Chakravarti, which is a form of, like, say, naivete. No? Like, okay, it seems you are the son of Narayan, so who am I? Brahma answers in this verse, are you not Narayan, the supreme controller of everything? So here we go back to this possibility of connecting Krishna with Narayan. And Krishna replies to Brahma, but I'm called Krishna because I'm dark in color and I live in Vrindavan. Vishnu is called Narayan because he lies in the water. How can I be Narayan? So again, Krishna is replying as a mugda, like bewildered, naive boy, village boy, like, they called me Krishna. Here, nobody calls me Narayan. They call Krishna. I'm called Krishna because I'm black. And Krishna means black, one meaning of Krishna. He's not saying because I'm all attractive. He's saying because I'm black. And there are some stories that I'm black because my dad, Nanda Maharaj, was worshipping Shalagram, and Shalagram is black. So the blessing came, and it came with the same complexion. So that's who I am. Why Narayan? So Brahma replies according to Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. The word Nara means water, but it also means living entity, and Ayana means shelter. We repeated this point. But the Lord who dwells in the water is one of your expansions. Therefore, I have appeared from your womb, just as the Vasudev form and your youthful form as Krishna are spiritual, not material, so this form of Narayan is also spiritual, existing at all times and places in the state of Sudha Sattva, or pure goodness, transcendence. Beyond the touch of matter, your forms such as Matsya are also of the same category. So this is what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. What Brahma is re-establishing again. You are totally transcendental. All this appears in the context of not misreading Krishna's form as ordinary. And let's conclude with Baladev Vidyabhushan. He mentioned some brief additions to what we have shared, and with this we reach our conclusion. So Baladev Vidyabhushan, in his own commentary to this verse, he's saying, the Purusha who reclines on the Karana ocean, causal ocean, and who remains after all the tattvas are gone, is the same as my father, the Purusha who reclines on the Garbha ocean, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And because my father, Brahma is saying, who is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is an amsa of yours, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is an amsa of Mahavishnu, who is an amsa of Krishna. Therefore, Brahma is saying, I am your progeny. Hence, my wrongdoing should be forgiven. So again, we reach to this point that is in all the verses are having this in the background. Before, because of this, you please forgive me. Remember that Brahma is begging for forgiveness for his offense. So the intention of the whole stuti on one level is Brahma begging for forgiveness. Of course, realizing so many things in the context of doing that, but feeling very, very, very intense and strong repentance. So in this way, just to conclude here in this verse, Brahma is using various definitions of the word Narayan, and he's proving all of them are applicable to Krishna in one way or another. Narayan is an expansion of Krishna, and therefore Krishna can be called Narayan because of that. He has all of Narayan's characteristics. In that sense, he's including Narayan and more. Narayan is inside, if you will, him and more. And remember, Brahma, just a few minutes ago, he just had this epiphany from Krishna, as I mentioned, unlimited Narayans are coming and then are wrapping up inside of him. So he's having this experience of this interconnection, Narayan and Krishna, but understanding you are the source of those Narayans. And so naturally, he's keen of expressing this in his prayers, this principle, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Suyam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Suyam. So again, the main statement in this verse is Narayan, who is widely known around Shastra and the world, the source of the cosmos, and the source of Brahma, and the source of various avatars. I mean, he's no small person. He's a portion of Krishna. No, this person who is the origin of everything has an origin, if you will. Not in time, but a source, if you will. So again, Anga means bodily limb, Angi means the body, Krishna is the Angi, Narayan is the Anga. So whatever exists in one part of the body, of course, is included in the whole. So basically, Brahma is concluding, whatever exists in Narayan also exists in Krishna. And more. Srila Rupa Goswami makes this point in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, mentioning there are 64 qualities that Krishna has, and there are four of them. I mean, there are 50 of them that the normal jivas can have on certain degree, not fully. Then there are 60 of them that some extraordinary personalities can have. No, sorry, 55 of them, like Shiva personality, that they can have on some degree. And there are 60 of them that Narayan can have on some degree. But four of them are only present in Krishna. Which are those four? Let's remind among ourselves. All of them end with Madhuri. I give you just a hint. Lila Madhurya, Benu Madhurya. We already say that one. Benu, Lila.
Rupa.
Huh? Rupa Madhurya and?
Prema
Madhurya. So these four are making Krishna the supreme personality of Godhead, if you will. No? Like highlighting his position even above of that of Narayana. And yet, again, my point is, beyond all that, Krishna is who he is. At the same time, Krishna is standing in front of Brahma. Try to understand that. Brahma is realizing all the things and making full circle and realizing this personality who is the source of God himself is standing next to me with a morsel of food, and I have the chance of having his darshan, and he's the ultimate object of my Sakya Bhav. So in one little spot, in one little village in Vrindavan, something that seems apparently ordinary to the unentrained eye. So here the source of God is in this little village. Pretty. This is inconceivable because of the Achintya Shakti of Bhagavan, this type of thing can happen. So here we will put our Bhagavad Katha to rest with your permission. And of course tomorrow we will continue with the next verse, which will, starting from the next verse, verse 15 till verse 22, there will be actually inside these 40 verses, there are sections of certain number of verses which have a particular theme there. So tomorrow we'll start one of those, from verse 15 to verse 22. But Brahma will continue elaborating on the point just being made here. God is an aspect of Krishna. Now, that requires considerable unpacking. And Krishna's position in general. So I'll leave here, but we have a few minutes for if there are any questions.
You mentioned over the weekend when you were talking about Gorni Thai that when we want mercy, we really don't have any position to ask for mercy from. In other words, we really are unqualified.
Uh-huh.
We don't deserve mercy.
Yeah.
And if we think we do,
yeah,
then that should prove how unqualified we are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then in this verse, you're talking about Brahma, maybe he thinks he really messed up because he's trying to appeal to, you know, I'm actually descended from you. You know, you should be kind to me because I messed up, but
yeah.
I'm your son.
Yeah.
So what's happening here? Why
yeah.
is he appealing to this relation?
Yeah. Yeah, we have been explaining that in the previous classes of the previous verses, how in one sense we could say as every single verse, there is an increasing in the insight that Brahma is having. Correspondingly, we could say there is an increasing in the humility that Brahma is expressing in each verse. Although in some of those verses it may seem that he's not that humble. No? And it may seem apparently, just externally, that he's like demanding some form of, like, I am your son, you have to forgive me. You may say, that doesn't sound that humble. No. But we were elaborating on this idea that in many occasions humility will take different forms, that it's not what we may idealize. Well, we may have a certain idea, okay, this means to be humble. And we may have our idea like just, okay, this. But sometimes someone with extreme humility will behave in a way that seems like bold or even may seem proud, but it's just coming out of a place of full confidence or full trust or full intimacy. So this is what happening here in connection with to Brahma. Brahma is actually increasing his humility. If we go to almost the first verses, he's very overtly, clearly expressing humility in the typical way, if you will, in which you realize, oh, he's really repentant and he really feels, I've messed up the whole thing. And he cries and he starts to beg for Krishna, please give me another chance, if you will. And as the verses, as the prayers progresses, again, sometimes it may seem that he's saying, even in one point, in one of the verses, Sanatana Goswami mentions that Krishna is, Brahma is calling Krishna Dakshaya in one of the verses. So a few verses back here, two or three verses before. And a Dakshaya has many meanings. One of the meanings is he who is beyond mind and senses, but here a Dakshaya is a name that the Vrajavasis gave to Krishna. And there are two Leelas connected with that. Sanatana Goswami connects with Putana, some connect with Shakatasur. Adokshaya means he who was born again under the, how do you say in English, cart's axle?
Oh.
Yeah. So Adokshaya, Yami comes from Janma, has to do with another birth.
Right.
And Adoksha means under the cart's axle.
Oh.
So, So why, the point is why Brahma is calling Krishna with that name in this particular context, and the implication that Sanatana Goswami imposed is because he's saying this name corresponds with your childhood pastimes in which all of us know how mischievous you were. No? And you stole butter and you broke stuff and you did this. But every time you did mischief, your parents forgave you. You were always forgiven by your parents. So Brahma says, you are my father. I'm your child. So as your parents forgave you, always, you have to forgive my mischief as well. So again, it may seem like how he's speaking to Krishna like that doesn't seem too humble. But actually, he already laid the foundation of humility as we know it. And now he's expressing another form of humility in terms of a sense of intimacy that he's feeling with Krishna. So it's not something out of the situation. So similarly here, he's referring to Krishna in different verses as father or whatever the verse, but already like establishing a sense of relationship, unique connection, personal connection. And on that basis, he's still having full humility, although it may not seem so. So he's trying to approach Krishna from all these possible different angles. You are my father, you are my mother, you are the source of God, you are this. But the conclusion, the converging point is always like, please forgive me. No? Sorry, yeah, pardon.
Yeah, just a further thought is that just because we're unqualified doesn't mean we don't ask for mercy. We may not be qualified, but we need it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
Ask for it.
And as I always like to make this point, of course we are not qualified, because if we are qualified, that's not mercy anymore. That's justice. Justice means what you deserve. So if you receive what you deserve, that's not mercy. Technically speaking, that's against the very definition of mercy, which is, we say sometimes costless mercy, which is redundant, if you will, because it's not deserved mercy. That's justice. So yeah, I mean, we don't deserve mercy, which doesn't mean we don't need mercy, which doesn't mean we won't ask for mercy. And interestingly, in some of the previous verses as well, an interesting point that Brahma did, and I think I mentioned also the last weekend, is that he's saying, I'm totally unworthy, and that makes me worthy of your mercy. No, you follow. That's how you are worthy of mercy. You have to be unworthy. And you have to acknowledge that unworthiness. Because you can be unworthy, but you are not acknowledging it. And that makes you really unworthy. But you have to do your part of acknowledging this.
I was just reading this one prayer by Rupa Goswami to Sri Radha. And the very last line is, I'm not deserving to be ignored by you because you have a butter-soft heart that is constantly melting by the warmth of your compassion.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. There's one verse to Vrindadevi similar. He did Shira Vasa Dasa Mandala Lamba Pado Gunabati Tavanata Nati Tumjanturesa Sapadi Babada Nukyam Yachati Devi Brinde Mayi Kira Karunardhram Drishti Matra Prashida. So it's a prayer to Vrindadevi, and basically the idea is actually you are literally melting in compassion. So please address a silent glance to me, because I mean that's the only thing you can do. I mean you have that nature, so here I am. Now, here the perfect combination has come. You are melting with compassion, and I'm the most undeserving, unworthy person. So, as you mentioned, you cannot ignore me, no, because that makes your melting a success, your melted heart success, to throw your mercy on me. So many times we find this very skillful, smart, transcendental prayers of the acharyas. Like, okay, you are known as the most merciful, but that name will be actually real if you show your mercy to me, because I'm the worst of the worst. So if you are not giving your mercy to me, you will be infamous by carrying a name that you are not living up to. Because to be the most merciful, you have to give the mercy to the lowest, and here I am. So in this way, the devotees have expressed this, again, seemingly boldness, but actually the background of that quote-unquote boldness is full humility. It's a really deep acknowledgement of who I am and who you are, no? Who Bhagavan is, Sri Radha Mahaprabhu, and which are the two natures, and how much I really... I'm being sustained by that. I'm really depending on that, yeah, that connection. Yeah, I need it. I do not deserve that. And that's, I don't know if you have that quote in English, it's well known in Spanish at least, which is, please help me when I deserve it the less, because that's when I will be needing it the most.
Oh, nice.
Huh? That's the logic of mercy. When I deserve it the less, that's the moment I need it the most. Of course, our homework is to field of things, no, just not pay lip service to that.
Wouldn't it be nice if we could treat each other like that?
That sounds like a good project. Hopefully we get closer and closer. Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah.
It was interesting. There was just two things. It was interesting that the Brahma was using the same strategy as Lord Chaitanya did with the Kazi, you know, expressing that we're relatives, you know? Kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah.
And I had one other question. I was listening to, I was listening to a reading of the 10th canto later on when Draupadi was questioning the queens of Krishna at Kurukshetra when they were there for the eclipse. And one of the queens, and I missed that part of it, one of the queens was saying that Krishna, you know, won her in a contest, you know, by shooting a fish from the ceiling. Does anybody know which queen that was? Same as kind of Draupadi, but even Arjuna missed the target. Anyway, after that, the kings were there. They were really incensed, and they took up arms, and they started, you know, fighting with Krishna, and he got his Sharangar bow, but it's described in there that he actually manifested another set of arms when he was fighting with them, which I thought was kind of interesting. Like, okay, well, is Krishna and Dwarka Narayan, or is he Krishna? So that's why I was. I mean, but I guess he can.
Yeah, he's between the two. I will say, no, he's between the two. He's also he's a little bit the two things, because Aishwarya is pretty prominent. I mean, generally, there is this description is that in Vaikuntha you have full display of Aishwarya overtly. In Dwarka you have more Aishwarya, but some Madhurya. In Mathura you have more Madhurya, but some Aishwarya. And Braj you have full Madhurya. Although there's also full Aishwarya, but it's totally in the background. So yeah, sometimes in Dwarka Krishna will manifest four arms. That's mentioned. That's even mentioned in the context of when they are in Kurukshetra, and it is at some moments he's manifesting four arms, among other things. Of course, he's with a crown and riding on an elephant without peacock feather, without flute. So you can imagine we were speaking about yesterday about that in Rath Yatra. When he's meeting the gopis and he's telling them, if you want, you can come to Dwarka with me. And the gopis are like, what? With you, but you are not you. You are Krishna, but you are not Krishna. You are not our Krishna. Now, where is the peacock feather? Where is the flute? Where is Vrindavan? Where is the playground? Where are you? No, that's not our Krishna. You are not our Krishna. Where are you? There's an important point made, of course, there in Kurukshetra. No? You have four arms in Vrindavan, that's not happening, basically. And things like that. So yeah, in Dwarka he kind of exhibits that, and of course the devotees in Dwarka are aware that Krishna is God.
And there's that one time when the gopis are looking for Krishna and he does assume four arms until Radha comes.
Oh yeah, yeah, we spoke that the other day also. Yeah, that Krishna disappears from Rasa Lila and the gopis are running looking for him and Krishna assumes Narayan, Bhuj, Chaturbhuj. And the gopis meet God. Radha is in the background. Radha fainted, so she's not running with the gopis. The gopis are meeting Krishna and they ask Narayan, and they are asking the only question that they have in mind, which is, you are God, you are omniscient, where is Krishna? You know everything, tell us where Krishna is. That's the only question we have to make to God. And Krishna's Narayan was like, my gosh, these girls are unique, no? And he doesn't reply. So the gopis say, for some reason, Narayan must be doing Mauna Vrata today or something. So he's not speaking. Let's continue looking for him. And they continue. And yes, sometimes the other part of the story is some Radha will appear next and Krishna is not able to contain the Chaturbhuj. Because the love, the form that he has that corresponds with her love is so powerful that the Chaturbhuj, two of the arms shrink, and immediately he becomes Tribhanga Lalita and playing the flute because Radha's love, the point is that Radha's prem is carving Krishna's form, if you will. No? God's form appears according to the love of the devotee. There's a type of love, God appears in a particular form. So in front of Sri Radha, Krishna cannot remain as Narayan. That's like the point of the story, if you want to put it in one way, no? She makes Krishna who he is, the ultimate, you know.
I was thinking that pastime actually proves the point of today's class, also because Narayan could not give the gopi shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Krishna that could only give shelter. So.
Yeah.
Narayan alone.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because in some moments, that's another whole conversation I want to get lost and found there. But in the Gopi Gita, in many verses of the Gopi Gita, the gopis are singing to Krishna's separation, and sometimes they're calling Krishna God, interestingly. We were that day singing Gopi Gita in Michigan, you know, and there are some of the verses that they are calling Krishna. Antaryami, you are in everyone's heart. Like the Aishwarya comes to the fore for a moment, but in the same verse at the end said, Bhaja Sakhi, Bhavan King Karishma, you are our friend, oh friend, come to us. Oh yeah, you are God. Yeah, you are in the hearts of everyone. But they use that just to chastise Krishna only. No, the fact that he's God is invoked only to chastise him, and then just they return and say, "Please, friend, we are dying in separation. Come to us." So that's the uniqueness of Vrindavan. Even if they, for a moment, conceive or invoke the idea Krishna may be God, it's just for increasing their intimacy with him. As we know always, not like when Uddhava suggested to Nanda Maharaj, maybe your son is God. And Nanda Maharaj, Vaitsalya started to swell on hearing that. How can he be God? Well, again, I know God. He's Shanti Purush, the personification of peace. And my child is not peaceful at all. He's mischievous, liar, thief. Totally agitated, crying, running, shouting. He cannot be God. So by just hearing the mere suggestion, his whole vatsalya became upgraded, basically. Or, as sometimes it's said, even if he's God, first he's my son. I mean, where apart from Vrindavan, you will find that psychology. That someone will tell you, okay, my son may be God, but that's secondary. Mm. Yeah, he's playing there in the room. He may be God. He may be the source of everything, but first he's my Lala. And if I don't want him to be a delinquent when he grows, so if I have to chastise him for that not to happen, I will chastise him. And yeah, he can be God and all the things he wants, but first he's my son. And Uddhava is like, where I am? What's going on? He starts to realize, okay, I have to learn a lesson here. I'm not coming to instruct anyone here. Okay, so I think we are on time for today, and tomorrow, if you have chance, we will be meeting again, continue with the next verse, and if there are any questions, we will continue also. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Gopinathju ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahmastuti ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand Haribo.